Hi, I'm Stargate Pioneer.
And I'm Steven Jondrew, and we're from Better Podcasting, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the show you're listening to now.
The opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopX Cast.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental. PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome, everyone. This is PopX Cast, episode number 52, coming to you on this March the 22nd, 2017. What's up, Lindsay Badger?
What is going on, Joe? You know what? I missed you.
It's been too long.
It's been 2 whole weeks.
Holy cow.
Oh, my gosh. I don't know about this.
Great Caesar's ghost. But, yeah, it's been interesting. We're on a biweekly rotation now, as if you've already guessed and assumed that. And we do apologize. We weren't able to do the podcast this week. A couple of our members were out doing some special family runs, and we definitely want to say we're glad to be here on a Wednesday night and be able to fulfill number 52. And this week's topic is going to be, of course, Kong Skull Island, among some other things along the way. As we proceed, we want to say a big shout out to Mr. Michael Murray and Stacy over in the PopX chat room. Yes, what are you guys doing? Feel free to tweet this, share it, put it on your Facebook, send it to a rocket, send it to Jupiter, whatever you need to do. Just make sure this gets
out. One of those new planets they just discovered. You know, you can send one out there too.
Yeah, or you could be like the crazy, like Applewhite, Marshall Applewhite, Hellbop, put it on the Hellbop comet.
Yeah, let's stay away from the Kool-Aid. This doesn't turn out well.
Let's drink the big Kool-Aid.
Well,
we're drinking some kind of Kool-Aid because we're here on PopX. Hey, guys, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live in the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
That's right. And I'm Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okie. And if you missed last episode, which was 2 weeks ago, episode 51, Logan, movie review and more, make sure you go check out our website at popxcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX. Make sure you also head over to Google Play or iTunes after the show and click that subscribe button. Catch up on some amazing shows from PopX Archive. And hey, while you're there, we'd certainly love to appreciate and just showing us all that geeky love by giving us a 5-star rating and review. Yes,
5-star rating and review. Well, Lindsay Badger, have you had a fulfilling 2 weeks since we haven't really been able to do a show, and there's a lot been going on? And
I've been just overwhelmed with so many activities. Last week was spring break, so I was doing extra trips to the park with the kids, and we've had a couple of date weekends with my husband and I. We got to sneak out and see not one, but 2 movies.
Wow.
And my sister-in-law and I also got to sneak out and see a third. So that is like a record for me to see that many movies in a theater for...
I know personally I'm impressed. I'm impressed, Badges.
I'm impressing myself right now.
You have like went above and beyond the Call of Duty, and I think you're just excelling. And you know what? It's really awesome to see how you have grown and matured as a fellow geek. You know, yeah, I would say you're easily reaching at probably a level 70 or 80 plateau.
Oh my goodness! So I'm no longer like a novice.
No, you're not on the 20. You're not on the 20 no more. You're gaining momentum. And so, you know, just keep doing what you're doing and defeat the Demogorgon. And hopefully one day. I know. All right. So let's get on into news, guys. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. PopX News coming to you right now.
Extra, extra. Read all about it. This is PopX News coming to you live right here on PopXcast.com.
Every single time I see Steve Carell do that, it's like,
I want to go watch that movie now.
Yep. Good old Bruce Almighty. Oh my gosh, that's a great movie.
Shout out to Mr. Zach Blum just joining us in the chat room. Hello, sir.
Hello, Mr. Blum. Welcome to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. All right, leading us off on the top of the list this week, we have 2 weeks of news, Lindsay. So this is going to be beefy. It's going to be beefy. It's going to be real beefy. It's going to be real good. Gelatinous goo. After a long battle with brain cancer, comic book legend Bernie Wrightson has passed away at age 68. And a lot of people may know that Wrightson was one of the co-creators for none other than Swamp Thing. And Wrightson co-created him back in the 60s, and his iconic style and line artwork made him a legend. Artist Jim Lee called Wrightson's work unparalleled in its style and technique. A post on Wrightson's website from his wife, Liz, broke the sad news. And we thank you all for all the years of love and support, she wrote, and followed by that on his obituary on his official website.
But that's so sad.
If you get a chance after the show, Google his name, Bernie Wrightson, and look at his style was just insane. He drew in lines. And even the shading, it was just really, I've never seen another artist quite like him.
I'm going to go look him up later.
Definitely unique. And so we want to send our thoughts and prayers all the way over to the Wrightson family. And just thank you, Mr. Wrightson, for creating a legacy character and somebody who's relevant even today.
And we just recently covered Swamp Thing. So if you guys want to learn more about that character, you're welcome to go back and go check out that episode. That was a good one. That was a good episode.
Absolutely.
But all right. So if you are a fan of the DC Extended Universe, then you have yet another change coming your way. After being pushed back once already, it looks like Aquaman is getting shoved to the side just a bit more. Instead of hitting theaters October 2018, Aquaman will be now reportedly hitting theaters in time for the holidays. It has been pushed back to December 21st, 2018. And that date may sound familiar to some comic book fans, as it also marks the release of Sony's animated Spider-Man film featuring Miles Morales. Pre-production is already underway on the project, and director James Wan has been busy scouting filming locations for the flick. So how do we feel about this? Do you think Aquaman's ever... Or you think he's going to ever arrive? All
right. So here's my take on this whole thing. I think that DC is really struggling right now. They are trying desperately to get a grip and a grasp on the film market in terms of superheroes, and they are trying their best to play catch up to Marvel's previous 10-year legacy of building up an entire franchise cinematically.
And I agree completely. And they've really been on the struggle bus.
Honestly, we've heard so many rumors of Ben Affleck, you know, and what's going on with the Batman. Is he playing it? Is he not? Is there a director? Is there not? I mean, it's back and forth.
It's been its own little drama, side drama. So this news doesn't surprise me at all with all of the Batfleck back and forth.
With all of that said, I do believe that Wonder Woman, when it comes out this summer, will be a great movie. I believe it will. It'll fire on all cylinders.
And you saw that trailer in the theaters, right?
It looked awesome. I do believe Justice League may perhaps be a bomb. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say it. I don't want to curse it. But judging on the track record of Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, if they don't get Justice League right, the fans will rebel. And that's mm-hmm. where I'm going to leave the conversation. If we want to know what you think, leave a comment down below. Let us know what you think about. How do you feel about the DC Marvel battle? Do you feel it's justified? Do you feel that they're two separate entities? You know,
my heart hurts for DC because I am a huge DC fan, and I really feel like that franchise deserves to have the success because they have such great characters with such great stories. But it's all about how you tell it. And if it's not good, then it's not going to succeed.
So. Well, you know, kind of following right in the footsteps of what I just said about Marvel firing on all cylinders, Marvel Studios' biggest movie yet, Avengers Infinity War, has been shooting in Atlanta for nearly a month and is getting ready to head overseas to Scotland for the next stage of production. By bringing together nearly every major character from the Marvel movies, Infinity War will be a major ensemble event. But fans have long suspected that it will also constitute a major shift in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Even before plans for Avengers Infinity War were solidified, fans long speculated that the conclusion of the MCU Phase 3 could see some or all of the original Avengers characters stepping down so that new characters could take their place in a new Avengers team. In that speculation, there's been a particularly consistent theory that the battle with Thanos will result in Captain America Steve Rogers' death or retirement. In a recent interview, Evans allegedly may have hinted that his time as Captain America is soon coming to an end. And I actually caught that interview. He was stating that it is time for him to pass the mantle. He has fulfilled his 5-film legacy in terms of actually being a player. And he's ready. He said it was a lot of wear and tear on his body, trying to be in shape and maintain.
Could you imagine?
Yeah, and he said he's just ready to pursue other acting models and careers, and just do other things. And you know, if he doesn't
do that now, then he's gonna start looking into, you know, it's gonna be the same thing with like Hugh Jackman with Logan, where you just get older and you don't look the same as the comic book characters drawn, and so it doesn't match up quite right anymore.
You has been doing it for 17 years. 17 years. And Chris That's Evans crazy. Started with Captain America. Well, not even back before that, but I mean, man, I'm telling you, it's interesting the times. But you know what, with Chris Evans, I would be happy if he passed the mantle to Bucky or
he
to
did
Falcon.
A fantastic job as captain. I don't think anybody would argue that.
But in the comics, Bucky Barnes becomes the next Captain America, and the Falcon even yields the shield.
I've heard a lot of controversy of who's going to get the shield after he passes it on. So it'll be interesting to see how they choose to pass that.
Yes, ma'am.
Torch. Well, we're going to back up a couple of bullets that got skipped over. In the more Marvel news, things are always getting shaken up in Marvel. Casting news seems to be teased every other week, and fans are always looking for Kevin Feige for more updates about the franchise's future phases. This year, the MCU will enter yet another stage as the films like Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 land in theaters. But Marvel Studios is already looking ahead, and according to James Gunn, the director says Guardians of the Galaxy 3 will be a part of the company's plans. There will be a Guardians 3, that's for sure, he said. We're trying to figure it out, and I'm trying to figure out what I want to do, really, and that is all it is. So we've got more Guardians goodness coming our way in the future. So,
well, all hail Star-Lord is all I can say. I mean,
I am Groot.
I am Groot. So I actually realized I skipped over a couple. So I'm sorry, Mikey, and
That's okay.
But I mean, I think we're kind of entering a different phase for Marvel. I mean, they've kind of are caught up almost with the comics, I would say, unless they do some kind of Secret Wars spinoff or something. I don't know. It'd be interesting though. Guardians of the Galaxy 3, that's pretty cool. He pretty much dropped it right there, so we're going to get a part 3 of that. So
yeah,
that's pretty awesome. All righty, moving along here in terms of, well, right on the strain of Marvel, here we go again. FX has ordered a second season of Legion. Oh my god, Lindsay, have you seen Legion?
I have not started it yet, but I am excited to. That's gonna be one of those shows I'm gonna have to binge watch later.
I gotta be honest, I'm 7 episodes in. And just when I was getting to episode 5 and I think I'm actually having a grasp on everything, the whole thing just switches back over and around. I'm like,
yeah, I've seen previews for it and I've heard the good things.
Yeah.
All good things.
It's crazy and it's definitely hard to keep up with. But the X-Men drama series from Noah Hawley, the announcement was made by Eric Schreier and Nick Grad, presidents of the original programming, FX Networks and FX Productions. And they went on to say, unquote, the first season of Legion was a stunning achievement. And Schreier, in a press release, said, more than a new series, Legion is a wholly original take on the superhero genre. Our thanks to Noah Hawley for taking the creative risks and shattering all expectations. It's a privilege to work again with Noah, his producing partners, and the outstanding cast and all the partners at Marvel Television on another great season of Legion for season 2.
Nice.
Indeed.
Man,
indeed.
I'm going to have to add that to the list of queue. I'm going to have to put that in the queue. It's hard to keep up with all these shows, you know.
It is.
We have a lot of good geeky stuff going on. It's hard to keep up with it all.
It is hard to keep up with it all.
All right. So we're going to switch gears a little bit. If you are one of the millions reeling from the Kong Skull Island release,
millions.
Then get ready.
Millions. Million.
You always gotta throw back a little bit there. All right. Another kaiju flick will soon make its way, and the King of the Monsters is taking on a whole new form. Later this year, the first ever anime film about Gajira will be released thanks to Toho. Gajira!
No, I'm sorry.
Gajira. So news broke that Polygon Pictures would be working with Netflix to stream Godzilla's anime debut globally. Toho and Netflix will then work together on a coordinated theatrical and streaming premieres. Currently, there is little known about Godzilla and anime venture. And a few pieces of concept art have been released. More details about the project are slated to surface on March 26th, when a stage event for the film is held in Anime Japan 2017.
Wow. Gojira is coming to a animated screen near you.
Gojira.
I wonder if there'll be sushi rolls involved.
Oh, I'm sure you know they've got to have the VIP lounge packed with some.
I mean, you know, you got to have some you got to have some kelp noodles and some, you got to have some feng shui going on with Gojira.
You know, it's not a party without the kelp noodles.
It's not, no. Got to have those kelp noodles. But yeah, that's really interesting. I'm starting to see a kind of a shift, if you will, in just the overall pop culture, whereas pop culture for the past few years have been pretty much predominantly on zombies.
Zombies and vampires were the thing, and now we're kind of shifting.
I'm kind of seeing like Voltron is coming back.
More sci-fi Voltron, stuff.
Giant robots. You think of the Power Rangers. Power Rangers dropping this week in the cinema. And then we just had King Kong, which is the episode this week. Now Godzilla. So we're starting to see that that motive shift, I think, in pop culture where the giants are starting to come back. And it happens every 10 years or every decade. There's a shift that always, you never know which way it's going to go. And it looks like we're getting into the giant era. So.
Yes.
That's all I got to say about that. Anyway, moving on here. A CGC graded copy of Superman number 1 from 1939 has been sold for over $500,000. You heard me correct.
What?
According to an online comic consignment website, Comic Link, the book in question sold for a record high $507,500, and it was graded as a 5.5 by the CGC. That's a pretty good grade.
Now, this is not to be confused with the Action Comics, which is the actual first appearance of Superman. This is the first Superman
with his name actually above
the
title. I'm learning.
I sound like a real nerd now.
You're young. You're getting it. You're getting it. But look at that. Look at that Joel Schuster artwork on the front of that. Oh, my God. It's so beautiful. Jerry Siegel and Joel Schuster. So this copy sold for a price comparable to that of Batman number 1, which sold for $567,000. Look at that. Batman and Boy Wonder. And also a Wonder Woman number one, which sold for a $291,000. So the first solo titles featuring the two respective DC powerhouses. It's pretty interesting to see how the prices are starting to go up. However, the book doesn't come close to touching any of the all-time records. A CGC 8.0 copy of Detective Comics number 27, first appearance of Batman, sold for just north of $1 million. Oh my goodness. In 2010. And while a copy of the most popular comic of all time, Action Comics number one, Lindsay, there you go.
There it is.
Sold for $3.2 million in 2014 at a 9.0 grade. Can you believe that comic?
That's like almost perfect, you guys. It's on a scale of 10, yes?
Before we move on, there's a story behind this comic, and I'm going to share it with you right quick.
Okay.
A man was cleaning out his grandparents' attic space and preserved inside of a giant family Bible, or it was some kind of giant book. I think it was a family Bible, was this comic. And where they lived up north, where it wasn't humid, it wasn't temperate, and there was a consistent climate all the time, it stayed perfectly white and never yellowed.
Shut up.
So this comic from 1938 was preserved. You think about that. That's a cool story now, right?
That is awesome sauce.
Yeah.
You can't really ask for a better story than that about
it. Hey, you can't find these kind of details anywhere else. That's why we're here on PopX. Come on. Yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Or second. I don't know. We didn't have the guy on the show.
I don't know. Moving on.
Geeky news for you. All right. The Marvel movie nobody thought would happen got a release date. Get ready. Sony is bringing you a Venom movie. The Venom spinoff will be written by Scott Rosenberg and Jeff Pinkner, who, between the two of them, have a fantastic film credits. As of right now, Venom is a true standalone film and does not tie into the larger Marvel Cinematic Universe like Spider-Man Homecoming does. That doesn't mean that over the process of bringing this movie to life, it might change. This also gives Sony a chance to dip their toes into the R-rated superhero movie waters, since the character lends itself to that. That makes sense to me. I actually appreciate the R-rated. I know there's a lot of controversy about, you know, superheroes are for kids and blah, 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 blah. But you get more of the raw, gritty details that are written in the comics, and they get to bring more of that true story to life instead of having to water it down to fit a certain rating level. So I appreciate the R rating for that.
It's really interesting, Lindsay, because I'm kind of starting to see a pattern here. A few news articles up, they were talking about Sony releasing Miles Morales' animated film, which is Spider-Man and Sony. So is Sony producing Spider-Man related flicks about not particularly Spider-Man, but the Spider-Verse, if you will?
Yeah, that's something that hasn't really been tapped into too much. So I like it. Well, I'm digging it.
I'm digging it too. I'm just wondering though, is this a paired partnership with Marvel Studios? Or is this a Sony venture?
Is this a match made in heaven?
I don't know. I don't have all the answers. Maybe somebody does. Anyway, moving on. So throughout its production, Iron Fist was a heavily scrutinized project for Marvel and Netflix. And we're going to talk about that here in just a second. It was seemingly made worse when early reviews for the series were extremely negative. The poor reviews and early negative attention created a situation in which Iron Fist might have become a flop for Marvel and Netflix. That's not the case. However, as less than a week after its premiere, the show was reportedly streaming Giants' second biggest Marvel series yet. Parrot Analytics tracks viewership data for Netflix properties, since the streaming service does not release such information. So Parrot calculates that these ratings by looking at the variety of data that includes actual streaming numbers and even social media chatter. But that is which it is only a positive. According to their data on Iron Fist and the rest of the Marvel lineup, only a few days out, it hit 63 million. Well, that is roughly 6 million below what Luke Cage registered last year, but considerably more than Jessica Jones and the first season of Daredevil.
I'd say that's a winner.
So I think this, here's the thing too. I don't get this. Marvel and Netflix only gave the critics the first 6 episodes. So not only did...
No wonder they had bad reviews. You've got to have the whole set. So
this is why it's not talked about. I don't know why nobody's talking about this. But all the critics got 6 episodes. And if you've seen 4, 5, and 6, those are probably...
I just finished the series today. So, yeah, you've got to make it through to the end. You can't stop reading the book halfway through.
Yeah, so 4, 5, and 6 are probably the most talky of the episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, the most dialogue and the character development.
Yes.
And I can understand why they would just leave it such a bad review on number 6 and not go all the way through.
They have a lot. Okay, so I'm sure we'll dive deeper into this in another show, but they have a lot of character development in the beginning episodes, so the storyline moves slower.
Yes.
And if you are easily bored with a show and you're going to drop it after the first couple of episodes, which I assume critics don't have patience for that kind of thing for the most part, then I could see where they're kind of frowning upon it a little bit. But if you stick with it and you follow through, you really get invested into the characters and you can appreciate the storyline a lot more.
And that's kind of leads me up to my next point. Let's, you know, briefly talk just a little bit. Now we are at some point going to do an Iron Fist specific episode of PopX. We'll probably give it just a couple of months, maybe along around
give everyone May, a chance to see it.
Yeah, around May or June, we'll probably drop an episode for you guys. But day before yesterday, it was Tuesday, completed all of Iron Fist. And there are parts in it that are really slow. There's a lot of character development because Marvel and Netflix, they want you to get invested into these characters to make you feel emotionally attached and connected to them. So when something happens in the show, which we're not going to drop any spoilers right now, but when something happens, you're like, oh, crap. You know, you actually feel for the individuals that are suffering in the show. And but at the same token, I kind of feel that it was really cheesy that the critics only got 6 episodes. I don't know. I kind of feel that Marvel may have kind of, I don't want to say screw the pooch on it, but they may have actually kind of bit off more than they can chew. They should have actually gave them a little more to go on than just 6 episodes.
I agree with that. But I think that now it's been out for a little while, you're going to hear the real reviews from the real people, and you're going to see the stats. 63 million. And it came out, what, 3-4 days ago?
Last Friday. Last Friday, March the 17th.
It's only been out like less than a week, you guys. It's been out 6 and days. It's already gotten that many viewers. That's insanity.
And I will say, it is a different universe for Marvel. I mean, as a undercover Iron Fist, he's a different character. He's a different breed. Mm-hmm. He's not Daredevil. He's not Luke Cage or Jessica Jones. Although all the shows are politely referenced.
It's the Defenders have their own little bubble in the Marvel universe. Yeah. And you can feel the same rawness, I guess, that, you know, you get a little bit from all of the series.
But that's actually a really good way of saying it, rawness. I like that. So
it's good stuff. I advise you to watch it and get your own opinion and based off of you're reading.
And technically, Lindsay, he is part of the MCU, so he's considered part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
So I don't know if Netflix will ever decide to actually carry these characters over into the cinematic part.
That would be interesting.
Any geek would hope for that. But so let's talk a little bit about another film, not a series, but a film itself. I haven't got to see it, so don't spoil too much. Give me your thoughts on Beauty and the Beast. I'm going to see it Saturday. So
I'll start out being I am not like a uber fan of the remakes of all the Disney movies. I'm really kind of tried and true to the originals, so I kind of go in a little skeptic. This one won my heart over.
Oh, really?
It did. I really liked it. And there was a lot of negative talk about this movie too, about she looking too young, and there was hints of homosexuality talk and stuff, which I didn't pick up on that very much at all. There was some stuff in there that could have been if you were really digging for it, but it stuck very true to the scripting of the cartoon. There was a couple of settings that were different slightly. There was all the songs were exactly the same. I think there was maybe 2 numbers in there that were new.
Okay.
And the intro into telling the story was a lot more detailed in the beginning of the
movie.
That's
what I've heard,
And I approve.
Okay.
I approve. It was a very good add-in. I think overall that they had a really good, successful way of telling that story.
Well, let me share this with you right quick. I was on the road this morning to Gainesville, Florida, and I always tune into Johnny's House, 106.7, XL 106.7 here in Orlando. And one of the DJs were talking about that Disney signed a deal to actually recreate 19 of their films.
Holy moly.
19 in a live action format. Mm-hmm, so we're not talking animated. They're going back in the archive and recreating.
Okay. Them. I didn't know there was going to be that many. I knew about Mulan and Little Mermaid is to come.
Yeah.
But
19.
That's a lot.
19. So
I'm excited. I am so excited.
So that'll be definitely pretty awesome sauce, I think.
I would, that's another one I would say check out. And I'm one of the very few rare people that didn't enjoy The Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people raved or ranted about all of its glory, and it's a beautiful movie. I just didn't really like it. But Beauty and the Beast, I approve. You get my stamp of approval on that one.
Personally, I'm excited for The Lion King. We've seen what they can do in The Jungle Book with the animals and the fur.
Mm-hmm.
And just imagine that in Lion King, man. You see Pumbaa and Simba out there, man. You're just like, what?
I think that was their test run that they can really rock it on The Lion King. Because you know that there's a lot of adults that have a lot of heartstrings tied into that one right
That's
now.
Mine, man. When I was in high school and The Lion King came out, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I remember actually weeping when the scene, you know, when he lost his father.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like.
And just a couple of comments over in the chat. Zach's wondering how in the world they're going to figure out how to make the magic carpet fly in Aladdin. And dude, if they can create an entire movie of CG animals talking, I'm sure they can manage a magic carpet. Easy peasy.
It is Disney after all.
Stacy has mixed feelings. She prefers the old school Disney, which I'm kind of in that school of thought. I'm all about my animated classics. Don't mess with my animated classics.
Yeah.
But keep an open mind. Just keep an open mind and an open heart and sing along with the songs because, you know, it's going to bring back all them feels from your childhood. So,
well, this is actually Alex's, my wife's favorite Disney film. So we get to have the pleasure of seeing it on Saturday night. So
cool. I look forward to hearing about your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited actually. So, but I do believe that wraps up this week's news. Yes. We are going to head on into this week's main topic, which is Kong Skull Island. Before we do, we have to roll the spoiler alert warning. So if you haven't seen the film and you don't want things ruined, now's the time to bounce.
Danger. You are about to enter a Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right, you have been warned. We played the spoiler.
Exits are here and here.
Yes, over the wing and then in the back. Oh, Lord, have mercy. We've flown through. Anywho. So
let's dive into this, Joe, because okay.
All right, so I gotta share some things right quick.
Okay.
I purposely went into this movie only watching one trailer. Okay.
So
I didn't want to spoil anything because, I mean, I'm kind of a Kong fan. I mean, ever since I was a child, I always watched the cheesy 80s Kong. I don't know what you called it, but it was a one where he was trapped in it was crazy. But anyway, moving along. I've always been a fan and I just didn't want anything to be spoiled too much because a lot of times the trailers can actually trigger things and spoil things for us before we even see it.
That's true.
And then you get into the theater and you're like, oh, crap, that's
you're like, I just saw the best parts. And the rest of it was just, you know.
Yeah, that's a key turning point in the film, you know. Why did you put that in the dang trailer? I kind of felt the same way with Civil War. I watched too much Civil War trailers, and it spoiled it for me. But anyway, so going into Kong, all right, so I'm sitting in the theater, and I'm just wondering, is this going to be like Godzilla, where we actually have to wait a third of the film before we see the beast in all of his glory? Cause I was like, oh my God, is this going to build up and we're not going to see it? And he's going to be in a shadow and he's going to be this and he's going to be that. No, the first 2 minutes you see Kong in all of his glory and his massive hands coming down on the cliffs. And
that was pretty cool.
I was actually really excited at that point. And for me personally, I really thoroughly enjoyed it. And I thought the character development, especially with John C. Reilly, he's one of my favorite actors. I love him in Step Brothers with Will Ferrell. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's so funny. But anyway.
Talladega, shake and bake.
Shake and bake. And then you got, Catalina Wine Mixer, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, he's a great actor.
He's phenomenal.
And is this the first role that he's played that's not really an actual comedy role? I mean, his character's kind of kooky and crazy, so he's got a little bit of funny, but it's not a comedy movie.
He's done serious films before, but even if you go back and listen to some of his dialogue in this film, he's still got that comedic quirkiness to him. And so he's not fully serious in this film.
Right.
He's still John C. Reilly.
Yeah, he's
court.
Still got a little bit in there, which it kind of set me off a little bit, but it worked.
It was a different element to the movie. I will give you that much. I mean, I kind of put myself in my shoes and like, what was some dude who crash landed on this island? What was his mentality be like if he was surrounded by people for 40 years that never spoke?
That's true.
You would be a little freaky kooky too.
Yeah. No, I mean, he nailed the crazy. He nailed the crazy.
The
cray-cray, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he's all about the cray-cray.
But one thing that really impressed me was just the sheer scale of Kong. When the choppers are coming in, when they first enter the island, and you just see the massive sun setting on the horizon, and you see this massive towering Goliath, and just his fur and his hairs waving. Man, it was just and the whole scene with the helicopters where he's pretty much tearing them up and throwing them to pieces and throwing them into each other. I mean, it was so wonderfully done and shot. And there were scenes like you were outside of the helicopter, but you were still looking through the fuselage of the helicopter and you see Kong's eyes. It was so well done.
And the graphics were absolutely incredible in here. I did watch this movie with my husband and he was really impressed with the graphics as well.
Yeah.
They did a beautiful job nailing not only the Kong and the monsters and everything, but the whole island. I know that wasn't all real. There's no way that was all real.
And for me, you know, there was a lot of elements in this film that just seemed to work. I like the idea of the native people. That was really interesting. And I thought that added a nice dynamic.
The native people were kind of, for me, almost thrown in there, like randomly.
Well, there has.
It's like, okay, well, there's these two dudes that land on here and they fight and then one dies. And then there's magically an establishment of people there.
Well, in previous Kong movie, the one that came out in the 2000s, there was also a native tribe as well. So
okay.
Kong has always been on an island where the humans, the tribal people, worship him as a god. That is Kong folklore. So you almost can't have a Kong movie without the natives. And you also can't have a Godzilla movie without the running Asians.
I really did enjoy the backstory that when they were walking through the sacred sanctuary temple-y area where all those rocks had the way they did the drawings on those, it's like as you walk, you can see the image and then it like breaks apart.
Oh,
that was really cool.
That was really cool. And also, too, we got to see Kong's mother and father.
Yeah.
Which was interesting. So obviously there's these things we'll get to in a minute called the skull crawlers, as John C. Reilly likes to call it. So we actually got to see that, you know, Kong has a vendetta against these mutated things, whatever the heck they are.
Lizards?
And, weird lizards things.
They're like iguanas with 2 feet.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, actually, that's pretty, iguanas with 2 feet and scully faces. But we learned that Kong's family was killed by the granddaddy of all the skull crawlers.
Yeah.
The one you don't want to wake up in the center of the earth. Well, they woke him up and he got really ticked off and it was a heck of a battle. But,
that was, it was pretty good.
But overall, I felt, you know, you can't have a beast this magnitude in this film without some kind of antagonist. And I guess the skull crawlers were the antagonist. But I'm gonna actually shut up my rant for a little bit.
One of the antagonists.
Yeah, We'll get to that in a minute. But so, Lindsay, what was some of your thoughts collectively going into Kong Skull Island?
Well, I'm not a huge fan of the Godzillas and the Kongs and the giant stuff. So I kind of just I just decided to go in there with an open mind and just kind of feel it out. And so I really liked some of the characters. I thought some of the characters were either over the top or unnecessary. But I mean, there was a large volume of characters to keep up with. And I know why they do that. It's because obviously they're going to get killed off along the way.
Yeah.
So I already knew at the beginning of the movie, I was like, that dude's dead and that dude's dead and that dude's dead. so pretty much all the scientists died.
There's kind of a running joke for that. Like in Star Trek, anybody that wore the red outfits were dead by the end of the episode.
Also, as soon as they showed the chick, I knew all about her.
She was going to be the one.
They didn't even have to say anything about it. I was like, okay, this is going to be the chick that's going to be clawed in his hand and he's going to be waving her around. And sure enough, at the end of the movie, he picks her up, you know. Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of predictability in this, but there was a lot of jumpy parts. Now, okay, I will be honest with you. I am the biggest wimp. There's a reason why I don't watch horror and thriller movies, because I have nightmares for weeks. There is so much jumpy moments in here that will startle you. I'm glad that my husband was sitting next to me, because I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Like a whole bunch of the times.
Yeah, there's some stuff.
So many creepy critters on this island. It's not just the two big bats.
And let's talk about the spider for a minute. Can we talk about the freaking spider for a minute?
Can I say that I have a severe arachnophobia?
So does
Alex.
And
I thought I was going to die when I saw that. The first introduction to the spiders was a leg going through a dude's head through his mouth.
He was impaled.
He was impaled through his mouth. And this is like horror and spiders and jungly creepiness. And I think I scream a little bit. May have even wet myself.
Alex,
I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think Alex had it. Alex actually kind of freaked out a little bit because she has severe arachnophobia. It doesn't matter if it's a little house spider, no bigger than the size of your pinky in the corner of your house.
I have the babies.
Yeah. She's like, Joe, come get it. So I of course have to play Prince Valiant in that role and go and dispose of the spider properly. But having seen a spider that is four stories tall.
Yeah, as tall as these trees in the middle of a rainforest.
That's a bit much.
They're not just, you know, your typical neighborhood trees. These suckers are tall and big.
But one beast I actually really had a heart for was the giant wildebeest with the horns that come out in the moss. Yeah. Wasn't he sweet?
And when he had the plane?
The plane.
The helicopter that fell on him, and then she went out with that was like.
But Kong heard it, and he came and picked it up off of the beast.
Yeah.
But we're talking about the beast. You can probably Google this image, but there's a beast, and his horns and antlers actually kind of come out curled, and there was moss coming down, and there was actually vegetation growing on his back. I mean, we're talking about a massive creature. There he is. Look at that. Oh, my gosh.
That was
probably one of my favorite creatures on the island. He was
gentle. He didn't attack anything. Yeah. He wasn't trying to kill anybody. It's the only thing on the island that it wasn't trying to kill anything, I think.
Yeah. And, judging by his nature, he's probably a herbivore. He's not a carnivore. So he's, you know,
that's a lot of vegetation.
I dig him. I like him.
He's a gentle soul.
So we have the spider. We have that. And we have the
flying bird. The yes. flying birds.
The pterodactyls, whatever you want to call them.
One of them popped them in half, and they were like blue inside.
Yeah, they were. Yeah, they're blue blood.
Yeah, they were like blue-blooded bird killer things.
No relation to the Blue Man Group, but.
No.
But they're like yellow-blue pterodactyls. That's what, I don't know what else you call them. And
they flew around in swarms like you would see here locally, like a bunch of like starlings or something. They flew around in like massive flocks. So.
Big flocks, yeah. And all right, so since I gave the spoiler alert warning,
yes.
I got to talk about a little bit of something that's from Universal Studios Orlando.
Okay.
Versus
that's right, because they did the ride before the movie.
I was going in this film having done the ride several times already. because Kong Skull Island is an actual attraction at Hollywood and Orlando. I think Hollywood. I think it's just Orlando. But anyway, and in the attraction, I don't want to spoil too much of the ride for you, but the main antagonist there is a giant T-Rex.
Oh, they changed it.
So I was kind of going into this movie. I was like, okay, Kong is going to fight a giant T-Rex. This is going to be awesome. He's not in here.
Well, the Skullcrawler is kind of like a T-Rex cousin.
It's more like a...
like a distant cousin.
I don't know what you call it. Like a gecko.
He's got two legs.
Like a gecko that's really ticked off.
But he didn't have any tiny arms.
He walked like this.
Right? It was like elbow jointed legs. It wasn't like regular legs.
It was really weird character. It was really weird. So for fans that live in Orlando or are coming to vacation here and you do Kong Skull Island, the attraction, which is an amazing attraction, highly recommend it. There are stark differences between the film and the ride. There are scenes in the ride where I thought I was going to see in the film. I'm like, oh man, this is going to be cool. The big witch lady. And if you don't know what that is, you haven't rode the ride. You don't know what I'm talking about. So there.
Do you think they'll update it now that they have the movie out?
No. No, because I think it's a different, I think Kong Skull Island, the attraction, is a different experience that goes along with the story of the film itself.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? It's still the same Kong. You're still on the same island, but you're on a different expedition.
It's the same world. It's just a different.
Yeah, you're on a different expedition.
Oh, man. Gotcha.
So that's something I noticed. I was actually kind of silently in the back of my head waiting for a giant T-Rex to come out and just start tearing into Kong. Never happened. And I got to say, the enemy in this film, for me, and Lindsay, you may agree with me on this, not necessarily was the Skullcrawlers themselves.
No.
It was Samuel L. Jackson.
That dude was batshit crazy.
He was off his freaking rocker, man.
No.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I almost feel bad for the military on this movie.
Yeah.
Now, I know this is like Vietnam, coming out of the war, they were almost sent home and relieved of duty, and this guy was like
2 days not before, happening.
Not happening. Yeah, 2 days before, and Samuel L. Jackson's character was just like he was going to lose his mind if he had to go back to the real world. So I get that he's twisted a little differently than the rest of the military guys that went along with it. But the fact that those military guys followed him for as long as they did and they knew he was off his rocker, it shows the loyalty that they're trained to do in the military. But I would have been like, dude, I'm going where I'm going home.
You need to sit down right now and have yourself an RC Cola and a moon pie because something's not like, right in your brain.
You have fun finding those explosives and you have your own little boom, boom party. I'm going to go over here.
So
a couple of them at the end decided to turn against him finally, but it took them a little longer forever than I wanted to.
And there is a scene, huge spoiler alert, where they go to the plane that one of the planes that crashed during the first part where the Kong, you know, bashes all the helicopters up and they recover giant tubs of napalm. And
yes.
Napalm is highly volatile and explosive, as you may know. And they
fill the whole water.
And he, in his vengeance to kill Kong, sets an entire lake on fire to kill Kong. And it doesn't work, unfortunately.
It backfires, obviously.
Well,
but,
let's just say that he kind of squatted this situation, if you will.
Kong did. Kong did. Yes.
We don't want to give too much of it away, do we?
Well, we did spoiler alert, but I mean,
yeah,
we'll leave a little bit of nuggets for them to chew on later.
Yeah, we don't want to, but let's just say Samuel L. Jackson's character meets a very
he played crazy well, as he always does. He's played crazy before and he does it gloriously. I did want to ask you your thoughts on the storm surrounding the islands.
Yes, the storm that never ceases to die out.
A little special.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about an island that is constantly surrounded by a tornadic-style thunderstorm.
Yeah,
so what are the conditions on the island to create such a thunderstorm to where it never goes away?
You would have to have constant... I don't know. We could get all meteorology on you.
Oh, my God. Did we just, like... We just snapped into the Weather Channel. Holy crap.
We did. No, I mean, you would have to constantly have warm and cool airs passing it like, at the... right specific spot.
Maybe it's all those bananas Kong eats. You know, he's just releasing a lot of air that makes a lot of circular motion.
That's got to be it.
You know, big monkey flatulates a lot. You know what I'm saying?
Well, and you know, there's that whole valley with all the fumes and whatnot.
Yeah, that's probably, that explains so much.
Okay, so there was a little bit, and it had to do with the storm too, but in the helicopter with the little Nixon bobblehead. At first, he was totally cool. And then he was rocking a little bit. And then once they got into the thick of it, he was like all over the place crazy. And then they show it again at the end, and he's like.
I don't know if that was an antagonist on Nixon.
That was a little bit of comedic relief and a really dramatic moment. And I appreciated them throwing that in there.
Stacy over in the chat room says, maybe it's evil being created the way the weather, in the weather that
maybe
way.
Evil. That's being
evil.
Yeah. It's got to be the evil.
Well, I mean, in a world where a six-story ape walks around freely, I guess it could happen, you know?
Okay. Another big bad that was on the island was the octopus squid thing. That was crazy.
But I was thinking in the back of my head when Kong actually tore into the octopus, I was like, man, can you imagine how delicious that calamari is? Because, you know, me being a Floridian, I like myself some fried calamari.
You're all about the sea critters, and I'm not to put a label on all Midwesterners, but I'm one of the people that doesn't prefer the sea critters, so that kind of grossed me out a little bit.
It was awesome. Alex actually said something really funny to me. She went, can you imagine how good that is?
Fresh. It's fresh.
It's so delicious. I want to fry it now. But the giant squid was really funny. Interesting character.
I'm surprised we didn't see more water critters as much as they were on the water and within the water. I mean, there was a lot of scenes where they were walking through marshes and swamps, and you didn't really see a lot of things come out from there. I was at this point in the movie, I was like ready for anything to pop out of anywhere because that's just kind of what it sets you up for. You're like, is there something there? Something over there, you know. So I could have expected maybe probably two or three more critters to show up.
Yeah, that's true.
That they never delivered on.
Let's talk really quickly about the skull crawlers. Like we said, these are the big antagonist, other than Samuel Jackson's character. You know, we have three of them. There is two babies and the mother, I guess, if you will, the giant that lurks beneath the surface of.
Big Daddy.
It was interesting. Kong was easily able to defuse. Well, actually, Brie Larson's character defused one of them, and then Kong did the other one. But the battle with the final one, it was a doozy. It was really big, and they were like throwing each other into cliffs, and it was crazy. And there was like blood, guts, and gore going everywhere. Definitely a satisfying battle. I felt it didn't go too long. It wasn't too short. It was just the right amount of time for the storyline. And also you had the character's development in the background of that as well. We're talking in a post Samuel L. Jackson type scenario. Anyway, I thought skull crawlers, did they work for you?
I think they did their purpose. I was okay with them. One thing that kind of bothered me a little bit is the lack of love in the love story.
Yes. Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson.
I know this isn't like a romantic comedy, so we're not going to get all deep on the mushy gushy, but I'm like, really, you guys like have these gooey eyes at each other the entire stupid movie from the moment you meet. And then there's like oh my God, I'm so glad that Kong didn't kill you. And there was no kiss. And I'm like, really? Come on.
Well,
it's like, okay, let's go get on the helicopter and go home.
You missed the point. You missed the point, Lindsay.
Oh, I did?
Yeah. Okay. The actual love story was Kong and Brie Larson.
But they just met. No, I didn't miss that. I know that usually Kong has a soft spot for the ladies.
Yeah, especially the damsel in distress. He's always there to save her whenever her time needs.
Can I just say that I always feel bad for Kong because he always takes all the brutal. He got shot. He got burned. He got bit. He got strangled. He got blown up.
His hands got torn to pieces by helicopter blades.
The big handprint on the mountain because he's all bloody. Well,
before we wrap up, we actually have some really cool Easter eggs that we're going to drop to you. And Lindsay and I are just going to share some of these and as we wrap up the end, towards the end of this segment. The first one is Hold On To Your Butts. And this is Samuel L. Jackson gets the one chance to yell "Hold on to your butts" in this movie, which is obviously a brilliant throwback to Jurassic Park. His character in Jurassic Park, "Hold on to your butts."
Hold on to your butts.
There you go.
All right. It's Always Sunny in Vietnam. Watching Skull Island, it quickly became obvious that the Francis Ford Coppola's classic Vietnam War movie Apocalypse Now holds a huge place in the heart of the director Jordan Vogt. Is it Vogt?
Jordan Voight Roberts.
Voight Roberts. Both Kong himself and the military helicopters are constantly framed in the silhouette against a blood red orange sunset throughout the movie, and as about as obvious as visual homage as you will ever see. And truly, it is really truly gorgeous. Even the posters are as one. If a few of the kids seeing this movie decided to check out Apocalypse Now, I reckon it's an homage paid well.
So if you look at the even the typeface for Apocalypse Now, it's very similar to Kong Skull Island.
It is. And I knew that reference as soon as I saw it.
And then of course we have Martin Sheen here standing against the orange sun. And if you back up and look at the Kong image before that, Kong is standing in front of a bright orange sun, mm-hmm. which is a direct. And there's a lot of Apocalypse Now references in this movie. You can mm-hmm. actually make a list on them. There's so many. And the next one we have is Kong Unchained. In the first King Kong movie from way back in 1933, Kong is captured, chained, and paraded in front of an audience on Broadway as the eighth wonder of the world. During the long fight scene between Kong and the Alpha Skullcrawler in Skull Island, the gorilla is temporarily shackled until he escapes off his chains and throws down on the murderous mega lizard. It's a brilliant nod to the original big screen Kong. And that's mm-hmm. when he picks up that giant boat propeller and he just starts digging it into the lizard.
Yeah.
It was so awesome.
Like, yeah. Get it. All right. So know what your influences. John C. Reilly's scene-stealing World War II survivor is named Hank Marlowe. In Heart of Darkness, the short story which Francis Ford Coppola adapted to Apocalypse Now, the narrator is an explorer named Marlowe. In another nice homage, Tom Hiddleston's former SAS man, Captain James Conrad, takes his name from Joseph Conrad, the author of The Heart of the Darkness. Roberts clearly knows.
He knows his stuff, yes.
He knows his stuff.
So basically, Francis Ford Coppola, when he wrote the book, and he was in the phase of writing it, not only did the directors and producers of this film of Kong Skull Island pay tribute to Heart of Darkness, but it was Apocalypse Now as well. So they're paid really close attention to everybody, the author that originated the ideas that spawned Apocalypse Now, and of course Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now. So really interesting. Moving on here, we have Vaiju Kingdom. If you stuck around for the post-credit scene, did you happen to hang out, Lindsay, for the post-credit scene?
Did we see it? I don't think so.
Oh, you missed it.
We missed it. Yeah. Right.
So if you hang around for the post-credits scene, you should know by now that no blockbuster is ever over until the sequel has been teased. You will see the Weaver and Conrad learning of the existence of other kaiju monsters in the interrogation room of Monarch headquarters. I'm not sure why Monarch has interrogation room, who's demanded Weaver and all that, but anyways, Brooks and Lynn arrive to share proof that other kaiju monsters exist in the form of ancient cave etchings depicting the beast Rodan, the enormous winged Mothra, and the three-headed dragon King Ghidorah. Ghidorah. And so not only that, at the end of it, we hear the monster scream and yell of Godzilla himself. So they're bringing Kong and Godzilla together.
Oh, of course they are. Yes. Of course they are. I would expect nothing less. Okay. A kiss to Kubrick. Skull Island is basically one big, bright love letter to, and satirical twist on, the war movies, which got Hollywood all fired up and political during the, and after Vietnam War. And Stanley Kubrick's classic Full Metal Jacket is not forgotten. Remember this movie's iconic poster art? Chalked on the back of Mills, Jason Mitchell, his helmet in Skull Island is Born to Breed. The same slogan, different weapon. Yes, I did remember that, and I noticed there was a lot of throwback to all.
Can you stand out and give me 20 push-ups, you maggot?
Oh my gosh, there's so many one-liners from that movie that I could go on and on about.
I'm telling you, Full Metal Jacket, if you've never seen it, do yourself a favor after Pop X and go treat yourself some popcorn and Full Metal Jacket.
You will come back and thank us twice.
Yeah.
That's a good movie.
Yeah. All right, so the next one up is For Your Health. Chances are only John C. Reilly's biggest fans would have called this ridiculous and severely awesome nod to his niche Adult Swim sketch show, Tim and Eric Tarek's Awesome Show. Great job. Yes, this is really interesting. As Marlo, he wears a badge adorned with Good For Your Health, and apparently somebody in costume department is a fan of Dr. Steve Brulé. Letting you know, there's nods to everything.
Yes, there is. All right. Godzilla versus Kong. Mm-hmm. Dawn of Justice, much? In Kong's brilliant opening scene, we see a younger Marlowe crash landing on Skull Island in 1944, followed immediately by a Japanese soldier named Gunpei, mm-hmm. played by legit Japanese rock star Mayavi. Thank you. A chase from the beach to the high cliffs ensues, and just as it looks like Marlowe is done, King Kong pops up to scare the living crap out of both men. More than just a cool twist, it's also pretty major piece of the foreshadowing towards Godzilla versus Kong, with the Gunpei representing the Japanese kaiju, Godzilla, and Marlowe as the Kong stand-in. And considering that Marlowe reveals later that he and Gunpei became best friends, you can bet your booty,
yes,
that Godzilla and Kong will ultimately team up to defeat a common enemy. Spoilers, it's mankind.
Dun, dun, dun.
Darn those rascally humans. They always foil his plans.
But that was kind of a huge big foreshadowing, if you think about it, because Gunpei, that's Godzilla. Marlo, mm-hmm. that's King Kong. And is Kong and Godzilla really going to fight? Because have you seen Godzilla with the new one? Yes. Yeah. Yes to the husband.
Sorry. I'm sorry, I had a children interruption.
No, that's okay.
Pardon me.
So in Godzilla, we actually have Godzilla plays the role of protector of Earth.
Yes,
so
he does.
We have these giant critters coming and only he can stop it. Well, in King Kong, we have these giant skull critters and only he can stop it.
Mm-hmm. So, and he's the protector of mankind on his island.
There may be a scene where Kong and Godzilla go at it. But I think ultimately at the end of this movie, when it happens, Kong and Godzilla will team up to face whatever opposing
craziness. Because the thing that they've been protecting all along will turn against them.
Yep. And that is mankind.
That is mankind. Dun, dun, dun. And it probably won't go down on Skull Island.
No, probably won't. Probably New York. Probably
more
New York.
Than likely.
Yeah. So that is officially the end of our Kong Skull Island review, Lindsay.
So should we rate this sucker?
Oh, yeah. You know what? I guess we could. If I was rating on a scale of 1 to 10, I would easily give this movie probably I would go with 7.9.
Okay. Okay. I was thinking more of like a 6.8
okay.
feel.
Okay.
So.
Sounds good. That seems very fair. So I believe that we are about to wrap up the show here, as we are pretty excited to be bringing some pretty cool shows along the way the next couple of weeks here in PopX Cast. And so we want to remind you that we have a show coming up that's going to be diving into the entire universe of the Incredible Hulks. You heard me correct. Yeah. It's going to be 50 Shades of the Incredible Hulk.
50 Shades of Green.
50 Shades of Green. Gray. Now this episode here says episode 52, which is the wrong graphic. That's my fault. But you can actually get a teaser. There's the graphic right there. Look at all the Incredible Hulks. Oh my God, there's so many of them.
Oh my God,
we're diving into Hulk land. So that's going to be a really cool origin story show. So stick around for that. And we have some awesome stuff coming up. We're going to be probably talking about Power Rangers at some point, as well as some films coming out. As always, if you see something exciting on the shelves at your local comic book shop or on the theater and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media with our new hashtag, #YoPopX. If you use the hashtag, we could use your post on a future episode of PopX.live. So #YoPopX.
That's right. Also, we are part of an amazing network called Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to gonnageek.com and check out some of the amazing podcasts on our home network. Also, be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. We love to hear from all of our listeners, so if you have any comments or suggestions, send them to popxcast@gmail.com. And also for future and past shows, make sure to check out our official website, www.popxcast.com.
Indeed. And Mr. Osterberg will be back with us next week. Yes. And I am Joe Burke, a.k.a. at RockCav on the internet. Of course, Lindsay Badger, how can individuals find you on the Twits?
I am at LR Badger, pretty much anywhere on the interwebs. You look for me.
10-4, and I am Joe Burke, a.k.a. at RotCav, R-O-T-C-A-V as in Victor, on the web. And, of course, hats off to my amazing team, PopX, Lindsay Badger, for just doing all of her promotional sharing and marketing guru juiciness that she does. thank you very much. And you are the glue that keeps the show together, as well as the other guy in the seat over here.
That guy over there with the picture in the square, he rocks it.
Mr. Mike Ippolito. What's up, Mike Ippolito? For all the slides and graphics. Oh, yeah, somebody's a Top Gear fan. He's a Top Gear fan.
I love it.
I can feel it. All right. So PopX is, remember this one note, PopX is now bi-weekly. We are on the same time, same place, just every other week. So no show next Sunday night, but a show the following Sunday night. Please join us on April the 2nd for episode number 53 as we dive into all things Power Rangers and more. So, yes. Lindsay Badger and all the...
The Teeny Boppers Transformer movie.
Yes, indeed.
I'm hoping for the best.
I'm going in with a sore... I'm going in with like lemons in my mouth, like lemon heads in my mouth.
I'm just going to say that the last trailer that I saw in the movie theaters...
I know. It's.
Oh, God. We will see. God, it'll in two weeks. 2 weeks.
It's going to be a stinking turd. So, I don't know. Anyway, so I want to also say hello to Mr. Michael Murray, Zachary Blum, Stacy Bryuka, and all the amazing crew hanging out with us over in the PopX.live chat room. Thank you guys so much. And that is your shout out. Take care, and we will see you next time right here on PopX Cast. Lindsay Badger, are we done?
I think we're done.
Over and out, Team PopX. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Take care.
From everyone at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on.